and think about it as something that we need to constantly work on.
Well, I want to thank you all for being with us. Tarana Burke, thank you so much, founder of the Me Too campaign. Soraya Chamali with the Women's Media Speech Project in Washington. And Alicia Garza, co-founder of Black Lives Matter. This is Democracy Now! Juan will be speaking today in Teaneck, New Jersey. Check our website. And on Wednesday at Rutgers, I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are listening to KBLO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and KBOO.FM on the web. Coming up next, it's the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, covering politics, history, and the state of the zeitgeist. At 9, it's Alternative Radio with David Barsamian, and at 10, it's Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, and at 11 on Stage and Studio, DMA welcomes violinist, luber composer Joe Kai into her home studio for a personal concert and a conversation with this talented musician. At 11:30 on Art Focus, Eric Bartels interviews Roy Antonio, one of the co-creators of Milagro's upcoming Day of the Dead theme production, Exodo. KBOO keeps you informed, and you can get involved. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meetings policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Finance Committee meets the fourth Monday of every month at 4:30 p.m.
Hey, good morning, good morning. This is KBOO, 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Joe Uris, Abe Proctor. Abe isn't here today. It's just me, and I'm going to talk about some local stuff. There's a lot of things to talk about, goodness knows. I hope you'll participate in this conversation. It's going to be about two things. It's going to be, first of all, about the planned widening of the junction of, or the intersection, as it were, of I-84 and I-5, and the notion that somehow we can defeat the traffic problems at that location, of which there are some, and we'll talk about that, by somehow widening the freeway. And I'm going to just say right now, having lived in San Diego, having lived in Los Angeles, having lived in Manhattan, I can tell you, widening the road gives more room to cars. It does not mean that there will be faster traffic. It just doesn't mean that. But we'll talk about that. Then the other issue that I really want to pay attention to, and I feel a little angry at myself about, is the question of the planned light rail line to go out to Tigard and beyond. And I'm going to talk about how we got into that and what was implied by that. And I have not had a chance to contact the people involved in setting up this meeting last Saturday. I didn't go to it. I feel not really guilty because it's not my neighborhood or bailiwick. And I also feel like I feel like I got a little bit deceived. And I don't think it was in deliberate deception. It probably has more to do with my failings as a reporter. But we'll talk about that. 231-8187. I'm going to start by talking about the freeway, because that's the easy one. One of the things that illuminates my thinking is a little paper published by the Neighborhood Association in Irvington called Historic Irvington Newsletter. And, you know, this is a thing in which it actually comes out, the ICA, the Irvington Community Association, comes out to joining the coalition, and it's quite a large coalition, objecting to the widening of freeways. And I want to be clear about this because there's so much evidence to the contrary of what the city is saying. First of all, there is a claim that there's more accidents and more problems because it narrows and it's hard to get on, hard to get off. It becomes a bottleneck of much of the drive time at both 84 and I-5, and there's like too much traffic. Specifically, I would say too much large truck traffic. All of that contributes to a very unpleasant situation, a very toxic situation. I mean toxic, like, you know, poisonous. And it seems that the city's solution is the same solution that cities have tried ever since the Highway Defense Act of Eisenhower's era, which built the interstate system, that if you build big, fast highways, they will take everybody everywhere really fast. Partially true, but also the case that particularly in cities or suburban areas, the more you build, the more they will come. Not just the more will people show up to live in a place or visit a place, but in fact, to use the freeway system. There has never been, to my knowledge, and somebody may want to call and correct me on this, but there has never been a interstate freeway system going through a city that hasn't ended up being clogged. Doesn't matter how wide you make it. The only solution that sometimes appears is to charge people a lot to use a special highway parallel to the interstate. And in that situation, then it favors those who can more afford to move on a toll road. It's really an important idea, particularly because the deal in Portland is so bull, and I can't use the last word. It's just really disturbing. First of all, they're promising to put a lid, L-I-D, not Marriage of Warner, but a lid on the freeway so that there could be more bicycling and more pedestrian activity and so on. But the lid that they're talking about building is literally like a lid. It cannot support apartment houses. It cannot support homes. It cannot support businesses. It's going to be pretty lightweight lid. And whether it survives the process is another question. In addition to all of that, now remember that we're talking about the place where I-84, that's the one going out to the east, joins I-5, it terminates 84 right there, and it's a jam and it's a mess, and it's often a place to avoid. But this is part and parcel of the same foolish thinking that characterized the desire to build a wider bridge with faking the number of lanes by talking about these, you know, these stopping lanes and so on. But in fact, creating a new bridge and widening the bridges to take traffic from Washington into Oregon and vice versa. That project died because the state of Washington didn't want to put up the kind of money that was required, and I don't blame them. We do, however, and I want to be clear about this, need a transportation system that includes the light rail going to the city of Vancouver. It should include a specialized truck routing for semis and so on. And, of course, it will include a wider or better bridge that will be higher than the two that exist now crossing the Columbia River. The Columbia crossing has always been a bottleneck. It's always been a problem. So there's that. A lot of people said at the time, look, you create a solution to the problem of the bottleneck at the Columbia River, and then everybody goes down and they're all crowded up and jammed up around the Memorial Coliseum area. Yes, that would have been true, and it is already sort of true. Now, here's the crux of it. You cannot solve the dilemmas of a ever-increasing traffic load by trying to build to capacity or even beyond capacity. You'll never, ever, ever stop spending money on it. It will eat up more and more land. By the way, years ago, Ron Buell, who was one of the founders and editors of the original Willamette Week, actually published a book about the facts of cars and freeways. And I can't remember the name of it right now because I'm stupid, but it's definitely worth looking at. The other part of all this is just the stupidity of this. If you are a person who's been around for a while, you will remember there was a great struggle and a worthy struggle about trying to create schools for the African-American community, schools for everybody that would be integrated and effective and of quality. Particularly the arguments surfaced around the question of what would be a new middle school within the Albina, the traditional Albina boundaries. Eventually, a long fight ensued, and the decision was made basically to locate it where Harriet Tubman is right now, which is right next to the freeway. Now, if you add more traffic to that site, which is already significantly polluted, you are bringing toxins into the lives of children, many of them children who are have marginal opportunities. You are really, really negatively impacting that community. And that's a major reason not to build this stupid device. But the way in which they're getting buy-in is promising that the bicyclists will have a better time, promising the pedestrians will have a better time, promising everybody's going to have a better time, and all it's going to cost is what? What is it going to cost? Well, maybe around $450 million. Now, I just want to point out something that's relevant. There are two other major state highways, Powell Boulevard on the east side and 82nd Street on the east side, both of which are corridors of terror, both of which do not have adequate pedestrian crossings, not to mention the terrible problems on Division Street, both of which are really, really, really jammed up, really messed up in all kinds of ways, unpleasant places to be, unpleasant places that could use development and better and more housing. The promise of this freeway fix is grand and glorious and foolish. And I just wanted to be clear on this. And I'm absolutely convinced that this is a stupid solution, a really stupid solution to a major problem. What are the real solutions? Let's go back to rail. Let's put all of these modal transportation systems, these trucks, let's put the boxes on the rail. Let's use the rail. Let's get an electrified rail system. Let's build high-speed rail. Let's address at the root the radical problems that we face in transportation and stop kidding around, wasting money, and in general, ripping people off. That's that one. Now, I'm going to take your calls in just a minute, but I want to get the second thing that happened. Last week, if you were listening to our show, we had a guest from the city whose name I've now forgotten, and I apologize for that. Nice guy who talked about, he came from the Department of Planning and Sustainability. He talked about a meeting planned, and I did not go to it this last Saturday. In the West Side, there would be a sort of a citizen participatory informational kind of planning kind of event. I was not there. If somebody in our audience was, they can tell me what happened. I was going to go, but I just couldn't do it. I have been to so many planning events. I have been to so much nonsense, particularly put on by what is, in my mind, still the Portland Development Commission. Where we break into little groups and we report back, and then it all gets written down, and then all those comments somehow don't get anywhere. The fact of the matter is that event has to have something to do with the fact that there is a planned TriMet tax, a tax that, depending on your income, could cost you $200, $300, maybe only $100 a year into the future. This is a $1.7 billion regional transportation funding measure. $1.7 billion. You'll be paying for that for quite a while. Okay, those are the things I wanted to talk about. Let's hear from you. 231-8187. Jeremy, good morning.
Hi. I pretty much agree with everything you've said, with one slight exception.
Okay.
I mean, of course. All right. Of course, people from Vancouver who are forced to come into their horrible, useless jobs, moving money around. I mean, like 80-90% of all work in our society is totally unnecessary, as far as I can tell. I mean, maybe it's even a higher number now with technology.
You're never going to get rich with that attitude.
Well, actually,
I'm kidding you, Jeremy. Don't respond to that. That was a joke, man. Go ahead.
I preferred to get rich the old-fashioned way.
Okay. I'm not even going to ask what that is.
No. You know what that is? I think it's Bernard Trust. It's something about, you know, basically you can uh, you can sweat or you can steal, and or in this case, my relative did the stealing.
Well, I'm, anyway. If I have to have that, never mind. Go ahead.
Anyway, so what I would like us to think about is truly imagine how we'd like our lives to be, and I don't think anyone would be coming from Vancouver to Portland to work in their bank, to work in their finance company, to work in their mortgage company, to work in their on their planning development job, to, you know, to be part of the Bureau of Development Services or all the rest of this crap. I, you know, most of which I think is fairly superfluous and or well designed to reinforce the status quo. So once that happens, I don't think there'll be all this huge amount of movement. Which I don't.
So you think this is a historic transition that we're in? Is that the idea?
Well, I don't know, but I think you know, you know, for, we've been something like this kind of species for a minimum of 50,000 people, argue up to 500,000 years.
Well,
and it's only for you know a couple hundred that we've been you know laboring in such an alienated fashion. I mean, you know, I'm not singing the joys of subsistence farming, but there is something sort of, I would imagine, and I know a couple of.
Well, you're ready to join the gang of Luddites, of which I am a member.
I am not unsympathetic to all their arguments, even as I sit on my sorry.
Okay, I need you to wind up so we
can getting brain cancer. Anyway, I just wanted to argue, you know, the real simple saw about bridges is if you build it, they will drive on it. And
right.
And highways and all the rest of that stuff.
Right.
So this is, you know, I mean, this is all 1970s or earlier planning, and it's. I don't think the answer is to, you know, to you know dig up Neil Goldschmidt and have some more new urbanism with lots and lots of light rail. Most of the people on light rail are going to awful jobs, and
well,
they can't afford to drive there.
I'm going to let you go, but I have to say this: I don't know that everybody who works. Feels that their jobs are meaningless or awful. I think there's a lot of different attitudes toward a lot of different things here. I think that it is legitimate to have a high-speed subways or light rail or something like that. And I'm going to introduce another concept shortly. But let me let you go, Jeremy. Thank you. Okay, we're talking about two things. We're talking about the plan, the bizarre plan to spend lots and lots and lots of money to widen and redefine and create new ramps with better speed, theoretically, at the junction of I-84 and I-5. And I want a couple of things I want to point out. First of all, that particular freeway, what was called initially the Minnesota Freeway because it went down the street, state name street, Minnesota, that freeway dealt a serious, serious blow to the African-American community, which had already been redlined into the Albina neighborhood. The same is true for the Memorial Coliseum, by the way, which destroyed a whole bunch of businesses and a whole bunch of homes. And then, of course, the next big, big blow was the decision, largely by Emanuel Hospital and others, to essentially tear down 33 blocks of housing, much of which was African-American, all of which was working class. The fact of the matter is that we have not been kind, nor gentle, nor reasonable to minorities or to working people in our quest to build a so-called, and I put quotes around it, better city. In the end, many blocks around the hospital are still empty. Many people were forced to move into the numbers or elsewhere. We can see that that was a cruel activity. And we can see that it destroyed a rich cultural area with problems, but a rich cultural area. And we can see that there were systematic steps. The creation of the Memorial Coliseum location, the creation of the freeway location, the creation of the many blocks torn down for the medical facility expansion. Now, whatever was well-intentioned or not about this, huge amounts of money were involved. Huge opportunities were involved, are involved. And this is a case where poorer people were totally defeated by the will of the powerful in the city of Portland, including the Portland Development Commission. And all this is real. So when we have someone like Tina Kotek in the legislature who says, oh, well, when neighborhoods object to densification, it's just because they're racist or they're anti-poor or something like that. It has to do, I think, for the most people, now some may be racist or whatever, but it has to do, for the most part, with a realization that this whole process of building an assumption about building high rises and so on is not always going to be a good solution. I have lived in Paris. I have lived in many other cities, Manhattan, among others, Los Angeles and San Diego. And I can tell you that when you increase the number of the densification, the number of apartment houses, you inevitably create more parking problems. You have people who have to park on the street, unless each of those buildings has at least one space off the street for each apartment, at least one space. And that's not, as far as I can tell, in the cards anywhere. The argument is rather a very high-minded one in which people say, well, people should be taking public transportation. No, that is not the solution. If, let's say, everybody used public transportation, let's say it was more efficient than it is now, let's say it was better planned than it has been, and everybody used it, you would still need or want cars. You might have a better way of getting them. It might be something like a rental system or something. But then, nevertheless, you want cars just to go to the country, just to have the freedom of movement. You know, you can't rely on public transportation to go from here to, say, the coast. Yeah, there's some, but it's really inefficient and really difficult. And I think this is a common misunderstanding of planners somehow, or else, I don't know, they don't get it, or they're lying, or what. The fact of the matter is, if you increase population, you must increase space for automobiles. It is literally, literally the dreaded creature in the garage. And so I just wanted to bring that up, and I think it's really important. So I don't know what happened Saturday in Southwest Portland. If somebody was there, I'd love to hear an unbiased presentation on it. I've been busy with other things, and I apologize, but I didn't go on Saturday. I'm so glad I didn't go. And I've been to a lot of these things, and unless it's amazingly different, I know exactly how it works. They get buy-in from some community leaders, often from the religious sector. They get buy-in from the business community. They get buy-in even from organized labor, because it does mean jobs. They get buy-in from a variety of communities. Also, interestingly, people who are ecologically minded and who really believe in densification as a problem solver for keeping land free for farming and walk-in and whatnot. Now, with that buy-in, they then proceed to make a process which they basically know how is going to work. And in the end, all kinds of communities find themselves saddled, as is the case with the interstate line of the MAX, saddled with a street split in two, and convenience lost, and a sense of community denied. This happens. Now, this is not to say that there shouldn't be, for example, a high-speed light rail. High-speed would be a key thing, to go down Barber Boulevard. But to take away two lanes, which are already filled with cars, to assume that those are going to be no longer cars, is sort of naive, sort of simple. And when they sweeten the deal by promising, getting the city involved, and promising, well, we'll build more densification. You want densification, we'll give you more apartments because we'll have extra money. No, what you really end up with in widening these things, whether it's the 84 I-5 thing or whether it's Barber Boulevard, is a bunch of land that's used for staging, for putting the rail in, laying it out, for having the trucks park and so on. And then that land is turned over to developers to put in whatever, high-rise apartment houses or whatever. That process, which works in one sense, is also devastating to the character and nature of the region. It also ignores the feelings of people. There is one transportation mode, public transportation mode, that I know would work, that has worked in San Francisco, that has worked in Vancouver, BC, that has worked in Seattle, and that is the trolley bus, a modern version of a bus with rubber tires that can move in and out of lanes that is connected for power to overhead electric lines. They really work, they're really cheap, and they're very powerful. They go up hills very easily. Now, that had existed in Portland up into the 1950s and then was disappeared. Nobody that I know of, and this is my own ignorance very likely, has really done an analysis of exactly how it was that the old Rosie system gave up its electric line. And I honestly believe that if you went to trolley buses and dedicated lanes during rush hours, you would find a solution to a lot of these problems about how to move people cheaply and quickly and comfortably. Now, that's just my idea. So, by the way, you're listening to KBOO, 90.7 FM dial, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. I'm Joe. I'm spotting off, and I'd love to hear from you. 231-8187. Mike, you're on the air.
Okay, Joe. I just real quick, you know, they can't allow this thing to happen. A real quick history lesson. Do you remember when you used to go to Interstate or MLK and you'd go across the Interstate Bridge, you'd run MLK and you'd go right across? They made it worse. That new ramp that's right there by Hayden Island, I hate to go north from where the situation is, but you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Then every time they do these things, they make them worse.
Well, it depends on your driving style and when you drive and what you're driving, but you're right. They don't always make it better. They often make it more complex or more difficult or less intuitive, put it that way.
Yeah. That's the only one I'm familiar with. I live in Longview here, but I'm a Portland boy.
Okay.
And, but anyways, I just wanted to put that in there, and that's what's going to happen with this thing. They're going to do it, and they're going to make it worse.
Okay.
Plus, we're going to have a year and a half of clog. It's just going to be a nightmare and a bunch of money thrown away. It, you know, we all know better, but maybe you can expand on a little bit. That's the only one I'm really familiar with. So.
Okay. Thank you for the call.
Thank you, Joe.
All right. 231-8187. Now, we're talking about two different things, two transportation things. They're related in certain ways about the attitudes and ideas of the powers that be. The first is the assumption, money's already been committed by the state, by the way, on this one, that we need to create new lanes and widenings and new ways of delivering people from one highway, I-84, to another highway, I-5, and they were going to put a lid, literally, that's their word, put a lid on it so people can have bicycles and maybe a little park, maybe it'll be nice, but we can't put, it's not going to be strong enough, not going to be structurally powerful enough to allow real apartments or high-rises on that space. So it'll be like, you know, a little bit like the plaza around the palaces of sports. We have it in Memorial Coliseum and the MoDa, which should be in the insurance business and not in the building of buildings business, the MoDa Center. Anyway, so that's one. The other one is the almost certain to happen and may be a good idea in some ways, extension of the light rail system, which has many faults in its original conception and it was done on the cheap, extension of that to the west and south, going along Barber Boulevard, out to Tigard, and then beyond that, I think it's supposed to terminate at the something village, the, what is it called? I don't know, La-Di-Da Village. Somebody will call me and tell me what it is. I forget. I don't go out there that much. All right, 231-8187. Love to hear from you. If you disagree, by all means, speak up. Who do we got? Arthur, you're on the air.
Well, hello there, John.
Hi, how are you doing, man?
I'm hanging in there, but I've been at the field of transportation planning for the last 20-some years.
Okay.
I've talked with you about it.
Yes.
And I don't know where you're getting your views from, but it's not very well balanced or informative.
I'm not arguing for balance here, but I thought it was informative. Where do you think I'm wrong?
Well, there's three highway projects in the package that includes that Rose Corridor I-5 interchange. And the other two are the ones that truly have an effect of adding more traffic to the roads. So why aren't we talking about them? The other two is 8 miles of widening of 205 between Oregon City and Tualatin, and about 5 miles of widening 217 over in Washington County. Oh, those are real widenings with no improvements to the public sphere, the streets, the access for on the Rose Corridor area.
Okay.
So, yeah. To me, it's just a distraction of some kind. I think direct people's attention to one side, and they can feel like, oh, it's just a waste of money. But I don't see it as a waste. I think it's justified. I think it's justified for improving all the traffic that's over in that public area, all that street space. And the caps, the gaps are kind of minor. They don't really have to even be a part of it, but there's definitely a rebuilding of the whole sidewalk area that'll end up improving traffic flow on Broadway and Wandler. Oh, yeah, yes, it will. And that's something that when drivers are less frustrated, they drive less fast, and it's safer for pedestrians. There's that improvement. That's the whole list of it. But on the other two big highway projects, no. They really need some looking at rather than just closing and say, no, what, look at this one over here, and get everyone all roiled up about how supposedly bad it is. I support it. I don't support the Barber Boulevard light rail, though. No, I don't.
Okay.
And you want to hear the alternative? Because it's like the South North, that project back in the 90s that city said, oh, it had to be done. And when it was voted down, the yellow line was a huge improvement over, had a lot less impact, it cost less, and it is a better design than what we had with the South North. The alternative to the Barber Boulevard is to take the west quarter through Beaverton and add into that quarter a light rail line. And that is the least expensive, least impact way that has actually more development potential than on Barber. But we're being jerked around here, I think, by people who like territorial in the way they look at how to invest in big public infrastructure works projects, and then like they just shut people out, or they lead them on down to goose chases.
Yeah, I appreciate what you're saying. I agree with a lot of it. I disagree with some of it, as you already know. I want to give other people an opportunity, and I want to say, by the way, I'm letting you go, but I want to say, by the way, that I am more and more concerned that...
I don't think you know what you're talking about, Joe.
Well, I can live with that.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, I really am anxious about the fact that, by its nature, talk radio seems to draw more men than women in the real world, in the profit-making world, which I guess is the real world, but also here, and particularly when the hosts are male. And I really do want to hear from women, and I also want to hear from people who don't normally call us. So those are my two kind of participant ambitions, and I'd love to hear from you. 231-8187. Anna, speak of the devil.
Oh, hello. Thank you, Joe, for taking my call. Hey, I'm with the guy who lives in Longview and that crazy junction by Hayden Island.
Oh, yes. That is a weird thing.
Goofy. Someone who doesn't have to drive designed that. Anyway, what I'm thinking is all this money, how about just the big worldwide educating people and offering accessible, affordable birth control?
Whoa, a whole other sphere.
Curve the breeding.
Okay, is that it?
Well, pretty much, because that's the problem.
All right.
That's the problem.
Okay.
But anyway, thanks so much.
Sure. Thanks for the call. 231-8187. We're talking about two projects involving transportation. The widening of I-5, I-84 to move traffic more quickly through the city up to Vancouver and across town east to west. And we're also talking about another project not related, which is the creation of a new light rail line, which is probably thought to go along Barber Boulevard, which would cut, I think, a couple of lanes of regular car traffic out. And as you know, it's been opposed on a variety of reasons by local people, but they're sweetening the deal by promising more housing for people who are poorer, and that's very tempting. Those are the two projects that I'm talking about now. One of them is going to involve a huge bond measure, and I can guarantee you wherever the hell it is you live, you're probably going to have to pay at least $100, possibly a lot more than that if you own a house. And certainly your rent will go up if you don't, to cover the costs of this project. I also inject into it my theory that they have not examined, and they ought to be examining, something that is common in Canada and fairly common on the West Coast, which is trolley buses. They're flexible, they're electric, they're strong, they come out of, in our case, a power grid that's pretty cheap, which is going to continue to be cheap if we build renewable. Anyway, I'd love to hear from you. 231-8187.
Hello?
Michael.
Hello.
Hello, Michael.
Hi.
This is your moment. Make it fast.
Okay. First of all, if they dare to take two lanes of Barber Boulevard for this thing, Tiger is going to rise up and kill the whole thing. And what they're going to end up with is just what they have in North Portland, which is the Maps Coast Expo Center. Can go across that. The map that they build on Barber Boulevard, if they actually do that, is going to stop at the Portland boundary because Tiger is going to not own, is going to put a stop to it right there.
Well, that's so interesting. That's I don't know about that, but it's interesting.
Well, I live in, so I mean about that. The other thing is that light rail, such a crock, what the internet did to mass media over the last decades, and that's not really.
Michael, you're breaking up. You're breaking up. Not your fault or mine, but I you're going to have to, if you want to call back, you can on a different line, because that one is just not holding up. And I apologize, but there you are. All right, 231-8187, who do we got? Harry, you're on the air.
Greetings, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And I was, the first is the southbound MAX line that they're going down Barber Boulevard.
Yeah.
I feel it should be another route, which is the Montgomery, at Montgomery Park by the Willamette River. There's a rail line. And lately, I mean, for the last 10 years, they've been using vintage trolley lines going up and down. And I'm correct, it goes to Oregon City. And
is that right? I don't know about that.
Yeah, they probably should use that. And I don't know why they don't, to save, because there's some houses and stuff around there and maybe some businesses, but not as much as tearing up Barber Boulevard, And and the next is the other freeway expansion that you were talking about.
I-84, I-5, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that would work too well. What they need to do is make a three-way, six-lane freeway up and down Marine Drive and make it a freeway so there's no lights or anything else. And that would take a lot of trucks that were going eastbound would take Marine Drive more readily, and it wouldn't cost as much to do it.
That's an interesting idea. I have not explored that, but it's an interesting idea.
Yeah, and the next one is the line going up to Vancouver.
Uh-huh.
Well, what the Vancouver City Council and the voters of Vancouver did not approve. They don't want light rail going to Vancouver. They pass a law not to do it. I mean, right now, light rail can go across the I-205 bridge. It's made for it. But they refuse to do it. So what they need to do, TriMet needs to do, is redo the north line so it goes directly to Cortland Meadows, it goes directly to the Speedway, and directly to Expo Center. Instead of these stops, if you want to go there, you have to take a shuttle bus, when it should go directly to these events, especially the Speedway.
Okay, I appreciate those ideas, and it's interesting. I want to be clear. I'm not a transportation expert. My background is fairly limited. I did get a PhD in urban studies. I did study urban transit and so on. In the course of that, my dissertation was really a history dissertation on vice in Portland, and my master's degree was an analysis of a community in isolation in Lair Hill. So, I don't think I'm much of an expert, but I do know something about all of this, and I am more appalled by the manner in which these projects are designed, are created, and have fake citizen input. And I this is what really bothers me about it. And I've seen it so many times.
Well, a good example is the I-5 bridge. Remember they wanted to replace that and how many millions of dollars they put into...
Yeah, the bridgehead.
Yeah, the new I-5 bridge, and they decided not to. Then they said, well, maybe a third bridge. Excuse me, we have two bridges going across to Vancouver, I-5 and I-205, and that should be enough. If Vancouver or Washington wants to build one, let them do it.
Okay. All right, I appreciate the call. Let's get some other folks on the air. 231-8187. Joseph, what a great name.
Yeah, Hey, I think that I agree with the birth control as being a solution to a lot of problems.
Well, okay, but...
No. This is really serious. Come on now. We said that back in the 60s, and we said it in the 70s, and everybody seems to ignore it, but no, birth control and limited population, people just want to, whatever, reproduce. The second thing is DMV should have extremely hard driving tests and make sure that people are competent drivers when every time you go to renew your license, so that we have people who know what they're doing. Another thing that would be really good is lots of photo radar, so we get people who are blatant law, you know, scofflaws,
I think we call them.
There's a lot of them. With the increased population, we have people from that drove in big cities and other towns, and we know how they drive. And
wait, are you saying, let me get this straight.
Yeah,
are you
saying that
people from other places drive worse than Oregon drivers?
Oregon drivers drive pretty bad, but we used to wave at each other when we'd screw up. and we wouldn't honk our horns for no reason.
Okay.
So the noise and the speed has increased in town.
Yeah,
When you speed, when you go across town, where do you get? You're still in Portland. You're not going to go anywhere. You're still in Portland, right?
Well, is that a horrible truth or a good thing? Listen, I think it's interesting. I think your ideas are very interesting, particularly about the more testing. And again, seeing as how I'm getting older, I'd probably have to have a test more often.
Well, competency.
Yeah, there's and that.
Then, and then I probably Metro and TriMet, the leaders, the CEOs are probably corrupt. And
aren't listening
to the needs of the people.
Okay,
and
you're making
they go their own way without having representation.
Okay, but let me be sure that I understand you. When you say corrupt, that implies that there's a quid pro quo involving power and or money, and I don't know that that's necessarily so. It could be that they have a different worldview. It could be that they're opportunists in moving up in their jobs. But corruption is a whole other ball game. Don't you think?
Okay, great. Okay, I didn't say corrupt.
You didn't?
I didn't. I misspoke. I didn't mean
lying,
greedy.
Well, you could say they're lying and greedy and so on, but corrupt is
corrupt
is a thing. Okay.
Okay, have a great day.
Yeah, thank you very much for the call. 231-8187. Terry, you're on the air.
Hey, Joe, this is Terry. Just real quick, I just want to make a defense for these wonderful traffic jams we have here in Portland. It's a wonderful opportunity to listen to KBOO, and I get paid by the hour. So as far as I'm concerned, let's keep them the same way that they are.
Well, how about if everybody, when they're in a jam, just turns off their motor?
Let's leave the music on so we can open our windows.
You can leave. You can leave the ignition on. You just turn off your motor and you wait until it clears a little bit, and then you drive. You know, I just think people. I think in general the habit. In fact, we need a device on all modern cars that automatically turns your motor off if you're stalled, unless you override it, and that would probably save a lot of fuel and probably save a lot of us from poisoning and. Might be a good solution to some of this problem. I hardly think it's a solution to all of it or even much of it, but it's an idea. Anyway, thanks for the call, man.
Of course. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, 231-8187. We're talking about two issues, two transportation-related issues, the I-5, I-84 planned expansion corridor with a sweetening of better lanes for walking and for bicyclists and so on. And then the issue of the MAX train going out, possibly Barber Boulevard, but there are other routes possible, all the way out to Tigard and beyond. There seems to be some enormous manipulation to persuade the public to go for this. It's a measure which will be on the ballot, and it will cost you if it passes. Depending on, even if you're a renter, it'll raise your rents, but it'll be, you know, $100, maybe $200, even possibly if some of you are well off, $300 or more dollars per year in addition to what you're already paying in taxes. I don't know how you feel about that, but my income's pretty marginal. And frankly, I've usually supported all these things, school things and so on, but I'm beginning to think, you know, why don't they plan it better? All right, 231-8187. Pear, you're on the air.
Hey, morning, Joe.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to throw in a third issue that kind of covers all the others.
Okay.
And that's the financing.
Financing!
You know, what happens, whatever route they pick, you take amount of money, you borrow a certain amount of money from the banks, and then you got to pay it back, and you pay back about maybe two-thirds more in financing. It goes to the banks, and that doesn't matter what the bond issue is about. It's just the way they do it, and so I think we need to have explore some kind of a city bank or a county bank or a state bank where that wouldn't happen.
Why, you would destroy the fundamental institution of free enterprise.
Exactly. That's not free enterprise. That's crony capitalism.
Okay, well, okay. Anyway, I kind of agree with you.
I think maybe that'd be a good topic for your show sometime, and you probably know a lot of people around this local and city area who could talk about that, you know.
Well, it's a good intro to something, and I appreciate the call. Thanks a lot, Pierre.
Yes, think about it. Okay, thank you.
You bet. 231-8187. We're talking about two transportation sort of projects. And I want to emphasize that the whole issue of I-5, where it went, how it went, really relates to, at the same time, the destruction of a redlined into existence African-American community that had developed a rich cultural environment and then was destroyed by public projects. And that's really important. The other issue is the possibility of a light rail line, possibly, very likely going down Barbara Boulevard. Many people out there in the Southwest are not interested in it at all. They even opposed to it. As you remember, there was a vote, I believe, in Tigard against it. I'm not sure. I think there was. Okay. So those are two issues of import to me. And I am a strong supporter, and I think we should be doing research to find out if it works and if I'm right. There should be trolley buses, particularly in urban areas, with a dedicated, during a rush hour, lane for those trolley buses. Now, a trolley bus runs on rubber tires. It is maneuverable. It can change lanes. It is electrically powered. It is virtually silent. It is very powerful. And it is very, because we have such good electric rates here for public agencies, very, relatively speaking, cheap and not polluting. So, why not have them? We had them back in the 50s. We had them back in the 40s. Whatever happened? And why did it happen? And I have not done the research to answer that. Maybe somebody listening has, but I'd love to hear from somebody. And this could be a longer project than just this show at this time. 231-8187. Helen, you're on the air.
Hi. Okay, I want to talk about Washington. I remember when it was Highway 99, one way to Seattle, or from Tacoma, one way back. And then they built the freeway, six lanes. It was empty. What are they building something like this for? And then, of course, we knew it got full. Well, time has gone by, and now, like at Fort Lewis, it used to be when you drove, say, from Olympia up farther, that there were windows to be able to drive. But now they have everybody working at a different time, so the freeway is full all the time. And if you were to drive that road at all very much, it is so clogged going all the way to Seattle, and there's no, I mean, they've enlarged a little bit, but there's no way to enlarge it more because they have the mountains and they have the water. And frankly, it's just, we're going to have to accept that maybe we are just ruining our life on this earth with trying to make everything work to make more roads for people to go. But the other thing is, in South Korea, they have built a high area where people can walk, and they're planting trees. In Europe, in places, in towns, they are having just lots of growing things and no cars around. I think we have to look at some different solutions to Europe or even South Korea or China, because I don't think we're doing a good job here at all.
Okay, thank you very much for the call, Helen. Appreciate it. All right, 231-8187. We're talking about transportation, I guess, in a way. We're talking about the planned expansion where there's already money committed to it. Of the junction of I-5 and I-84. Now, that is a bad place to be at anything like rush hour, even not rush hour. You can get jammed up and waste gas and sit there, and there are fender benders, and there's a lot of issues. And the city is overclaiming accidents, by the way, at that location. The irony that I see in that, aside from the fact that it's a bull project where they're giving bicyclists a little something and this a little something and that a little something, and ignoring the historic role that the building of the I-5, the Minnesota, as it was then known, freeway, played in destroying the black community, which came into existence because of redlining to begin with. But apart from that, it seems to me that the old rule still applies. More road lanes you build, the more cars are on the road. Pretty soon you have to build more lanes and so on. Doesn't seem like a solution to me. I really do believe that freight should be on rail with electric trains. I really do believe there should be high-speed trains intercity instead of everyone flying around, because it's actually not, if it's high speed, the difference in getting their time is virtually non-existent. Flying is slow, not because flying is slow, but because getting on a plane, getting off a plane, all that is slow. there's also this issue of the plan for the light rail. Light rail was always built, I felt, on the cheap. It has always been not as well planned as I would have hoped. I still like light rail. I use it. But I'm really dubious about this plan to narrow the number of drive lanes, as I think would be, or to knock down buildings to make more lanes of traffic on Barber Boulevard. It just seems to me to be a poor solution to a very real problem. Love to hear from you. 231-8187. Jack?
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. What's up?
Anybody would say there should be high-speed rail all over the U.S.
Uh-huh.
And I mean high-speed, like bullet trains and et cetera, and obviously from Portland to Seattle and all down the West Coast.
Oh, yeah, there should be a train from Vancouver, B.C., all the way to San Diego.
Of course, but high-speed, like extreme, you know, like 200 mile an hour or whatever they got. And then I was in Australia, and they got really nice trains that cruise through the city up high. And that's where things have to be raised. And then they should double-decker the I-5, at least double-decker the I-5. And then on top of that, I would say, where they put all those stupid speed bumps in all over the place and don't fix the potholes, that's a really great thing to do. I mean, that's insane. Like if you're on Powell, say, and right around McDonald's, and you put in these concrete blocks and stuff like that, and it just basically impedes driving, I believe, all that kind of thing. That's about all I got to say about that. Trolleys, I'm from Vancouver, Canada. There's a bus there every 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Not like here. So it's hard to say, what to do. The trolleys are okay. There needs to be way more busing and transportation. Otherwise, you almost have to have a car to get around.
Well, I think your point is well taken. I also think that it's a crucial factor is to make it as inexpensive as possible. The only reason to actually charge money, aside from the revenue aspect, obviously, is that it discourages people who are just riding for a place to be out of the weather. We have a serious problem all over the United States, and notably in Portland, with people who have lost their homes, often through no fault of their own, but because rents have gone up and the situation is very dire. And I don't see a solution. I don't see a solution to any of these problems with what's being proposed. And I am very leery of the so-called citizen participation process that TriMet and the city are indulging in the West Side Corridor. And I'm very leery of past citizen participation. They structure these events so that it's not a mass meeting. It's not people spending 2, even 3 hours together having an argument in a large number. It always breaks into tinier groups, supposedly more managed, always managed by somebody who can make it work better. And I'm just, I'm very cynical around all of that. Anyway, listen, I really appreciate your call. Do you want to make another point?
No, not really, just to reiterate.
Okay.
I mean, rapid rail is absolute a necessity. It needs to be done. And try to get somebody else on the line with a double-decker, the I-5, because,
Well,
what else is there?
The problem with double-decking freeways is what was discovered with the great earthquake in California, in the Bay Area. The whole thing fell down. It was not a very pleasant experience. Okay, listen, I'm going to give some others a chance. Thank you very much for the call. Well, this is interesting. What do we got? 231-8187. Houston, like the city?
Yeah.
Okay.
Say, I was recently talking to a TriMet planner.
Uh-huh.
And I was noting that Denver has opened 4 major lines in the last 2 years. And then he noted, you know, all the work that's being done in Seattle. And I don't lift Denver or Seattle up as necessarily great places to live. But at any rate, he pointed out they have about 10 times more money available for transportation, et cetera, than Portland does.
Well, that may be a root of the problem to some degree, too. Yeah.
Yeah, and he attributed that to the lack of a sales tax in Oregon.
And are you an advocate of a sales tax?
Well, for big projects, yes, because it enables financing. You can plan ahead if you have streams of money coming in through sales tax. And, you know, I think that's the issue. An issue, not the only issue. But I just wanted to bring that to your listeners' attention.
Okay, thank you very much for the call. I have to say that I am an old-time Luddite, and I truly believe that the solution to inequities, many inequities in our society, is to tax the rich. People don't need as much money in the rich world as they have, and they ought to be eagerly giving money to the people to build a better society so that they, too, can have a faster trip. 231-8187. Pascal, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
I just wanted to step in very quickly to say, didn't we have trolley buses in downtown Portland in the 1990s?
Why, bless you, not in the 1990s. We had them up through the middle 1950s, and I don't know why. I haven't done the research. They were disappeared.
We had buses from Hungary. I clearly remember that.
Well, those were articulated buses, and they weren't electric.
You're positive.
I am positive. Yeah.
Okay, because those buses were in Budapest at the same time, and they were trolley buses, so that's why.
Well, they could have been trolley buses. I mean, they easily could have been mounted with electric motors, but they weren't.
Okay. When I heard that, I went like, wait a minute. I remember being.
No, your memory of the buses, the articulated buses, is right. It's just they weren't electric.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for taking my call. And
sure.
I actually, about the transportation, I want to say just a quick word here. The Selwood Bridge is the worst thing ever since it's been redone.
You mean it isn't better?
It's awful. It's unmanageable in the morning since they put the traffic lines. It's impossible to get on there. You have traffic backed up all the way, all in the neighborhood, all the way to 13th.
Oh, I will have to look into that, and I really appreciate the information.
Unmanageable. It's the traffic lights that basically, it used to be that one car goes, one car stops, one car goes, and the traffic lights delay everything. I hate it.
Okay.
But anyway, thanks.
Thank you very much for the call, and thanks for the information. 231-8187. Who do we got? Bill, and you're the last guy, and you got to be quick. Go for it.
What happened to the light rail going to Forest Grove?
What? Oh.
Wasn't that long ago, the plan was to put the West Side Light Rail out to Forest Grove.
Yeah, that's true. Line. That's true. It still might happen.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Because the Barber one is to nowhere.
Well, you know? I think it goes to, what do they call that fancy shopping center off of I-5?
Bridgeport Village.
I think that's where it's supposed to terminate. But I'm not clear on this, and I am very dubious. I think it makes real good sense to run a high-speed electric, or at least medium-speed electric, local transportation systems. They're expensive to build, and they have to be very carefully thought out. Anyway, we're running out of time, man, and I do thank you for the call. And I hope
have a good one.
You too. Take care. Hey, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. We're on Tuesday mornings from 8 to 9. Usually we get into international or national news. I wanted to do this because I'm really concerned with the way these things are going. And I hope you will be concerned too and let your representatives in city, county, and state government know exactly how you feel about it. And for goodness sake, I know the meetings are a drag, but you should go to them. 231. Well, no, that's over. You all stay tuned. Best in music and best in public affairs. KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial.
Good morning, KBOO listeners. It's just a few seconds before 9 a.m., and you are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station. Up next, after these announcements, Alternative Radio with David Barsamyan. And then at 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, on stage and studio, DMA Roberts welcomes violinist, looper composer Joe Kai into her home studio for a personal concert and conversation with this talented musician. And then at 11:30, wrapping up the morning, on Art Focus, Eric Bartels interviews Roy Antonio, one of the co-creators of Milagro's upcoming Day of the Dead-themed production, Exodo. KBOO keeps you informed, and you can get involved. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member. This afternoon, I'd like to mention we always have Tuesday from noon to 4 Spanish language programming. It's something very wonderful that KBOO has, and always want to make that known. We have Buscando America at noon from noon to 1:30, and then Fa Radio from 1:30 to 2:30, and then Radio Tonali. And then at 4 o'clock, we have Democracy Now! And then at 5 o'clock every weekday, we produce our own news here at KBOO. And so stick around for all of that. Thank you.